This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the AI Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Schaefer. Today on the podcast, we have the pleasure of being joined by Jason Knight, who is the VP of ML at Octo AI, a legendary company I've been following for a long time. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Oh, it's great to be here and great to meet you, Jaden.
And do I see correctly, is that an octopus on the bookshelf behind you? Is that, you know, the mascot?
I have, yes, I have three octopi and then a rustacean crab for those counting.
We got the ocean theme going. But yeah, Jason, seriously, super excited to have you on. I'm wondering, could you give everyone just like the 5-second rundown of your background and kind of what brought you to the point where you're at today?
Yeah, I would love to. So I started my professional career in grad school, I guess you could say, building machine learning models for cancer biology, diagnostics and therapeutics. And I did that for a bit in biotech before realizing we needed more powerful ML infrastructure to do the things that ultimately I wanted to do. And so that led me down the rabbit hole from AI accelerator startups like Nirvana that were acquired by Intel, and then led me to meeting the founders of Octo AI, which we kicked off about 4.5 years ago now.
Amazing. Okay, so tell me a little bit about, give a quick background to people that might be new. I'm sure a ton of people that listen are already, you know, their company or they're already using Octo AI because this is obviously a legendary company. But for those that aren't, give us a little background and context on what Octo AI does. And then let's dive into some more of how it got started.
Yeah. So Octo AI is a platform for generative AI, which means if you're an app developer looking to build the next generation of intelligent applications, or you're looking to add more intelligence to your existing applications, then we take the best in breed generative AI models for image generation, text generation, et cetera, and both get those working, pull those together, and host those on our platform so that it's an easy usage, pay-as-you-go model for enabling you to get started quickly, but more importantly, scale up as your product grows and you reach product market fit. And we have really a lot of expertise in the optimization and scale of that so that you don't have to worry about getting a Hacker News effect or what have you. We'll grow with you and we'll continue to add more models, more capabilities every day.
Amazing. Okay. So obviously, listening to that, this is obviously a product that is super valuable in the market today. A ton of people are interested in. I know you guys are a super hot company. Tell me a little bit about the beginning. You said you got this thing kicked off 4 years ago. What did that look like? How did you meet the other founders? What was the vision? Tell me a little bit about the beginning.
Yeah. So we started at the bottom, basically, because I was at Intel at the time, and we were building machine learning accelerators across the stack there. And I was realizing more and more that not only at Intel, but across the globe, the software layer on top of machine learning hardware was holding people back. And so I met the other co-founders of Octo AI at University of Washington. They had built this world-class open source project called TVM to build a single layer that went over all hardware accelerators and enabled you to accelerate machine learning workloads, actually using machine learning, but we could geek out if you'd like. And ever since then, we've always known that inference was going to be big and continue to grow. Because as we quip, training is once, inference is forever. So there was a lot of focus back then on the training side, but we started from day one on the inference, enabling you to get better costs and capabilities on the hardware that you have available to you. And ever since then, we've been going up in the stack further and further as both models have become more powerful. And so the amount of building your own models has reduced in time because these generative AI models, what, you know, what I think people mean when they say generative AI is that you don't need to train your own model. It's so general purpose that you can use it out of the box on it for a wide variety of use cases. And so by moving up the stack and now hosting the full stack and platform for you, it gives us more opportunities to optimize and improve the capabilities. Whereas in the early days, we were more focused on kind of the core acceleration and delivering that to sophisticated ML engineers at, you know, massive corporations. So that's a little bit of the journey, but we've always been focused on inference and, experts in GPU acceleration in particular.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's super cool. And also hearing everyone else's kind of background on what brought them into it. I'd be curious, like, how did you meet the other founders, the co-founders? Are these people that you like went to school with, or like, what's your guys' story? Like, how did the original team get together?
Yeah, so I think I first learned about Tianqi Chen, who had built XGBoost as a project that is extremely popular and fast, random forest library, still very popular this day on Kaggle competitions. And then the TVM project was kind of his next brainchild. And then at a conference, I met him and his advisor, Luis Seza, and then the rest of the folks working with them on the TVM project. And I started funding that work actually at Intel because it was so valuable to what we were doing at Intel that I wanted to support that work and learn more. And then that's when we kind of started working more closely together. And but I had a lot of colleagues kind of leaving Intel and going to other hardware accelerator startups, and they were all having the same software challenges. And I realized, this is a bigger problem than just we have here at Intel. It's really across the industry. And these folks here at University of Washington are, building something that has truly transformational potential. So that's kind of how it got started.
That's amazing. Okay, that's super, super cool. Talking about like the product itself, I've been kind of looking at it. It looks like this is, one of the fastest, it's one of the best ways, like you said, it expedites, it speeds up these models. Can you explain kind of what sets your technology apart as far as, achieving this performance that you guys have?
I think it's, I would say it's a few things. One is just our experience and focus in the inference space. So kind of using that lens to then really take the whole systems optimization problem from top to bottom, because, you can look at just the hardware and kernels, just the engine, just the serving layer, or even the full application loop. But it really takes, all of those put together in the right way to, have a great experience, that has meaningful outcomes in your application use case. And so, at each layer in the stack, we have, things we do in optimizations. And it's really how they fit all together and really how we keep up and keep composing those together as things come out in the marketplace and we learn from literature and what others do. And as we innovate at each layer of the stacks and compose all of those together. So yeah, it's hard to kind of formulate that into a pithy answer, but it's
right.
Kind of each layer of the stack doing innovation and pulling best in breed and then integrating that overall and then keeping that velocity high enough in the face of the pace of evolution in the generative AI space.
Yeah, so much is happening so rapidly. And so, yeah, like you mentioned, there's a number of different areas where you guys have been optimizing and increasing efficiencies and stuff. I'm wondering, what are some of the biggest challenges that you guys have faced? I know you're the VP of ML. You're a developer, right? So you oversee a lot of this technical stuff. But what are some of the biggest challenges you've faced while scaling up this company, Octo AI?
Yeah, I'd say, how many hours do you have? Seriously, I think one of them is just these models and these use cases are so new and our customers, in many cases themselves are new and building products that couldn't have existed, 12, even 6 months ago. And so a lot of it is figuring out, you read books about product market fit, and it kind of treats the market as relatively static, and you're trying to find the needs and how you fit in there. Whereas this is a much more dynamical transient system where, you know, we're not even sure what the, you know, technical landscape is, much less the business landscape on top of that. And so what products are going to exist, like what are their needs, and then what are the technical foundations you need to go and like start now to go in. And so you're kind of constantly propagating information back and forth, like, okay, there's a technical innovation that we have here, either internally or from the rest of the community. What does that mean for what's possible or now possible? Or and then how do we trend, you know, merge that with our existing efforts, the other features that we've built, the other kind of customers and use cases that we have? And so I would say it's keeping on top of all of that, and then managing the complexity that arises from that, right? Because you're kind of continue to add features to support users and use cases, but then, you know, deprecating those at the right time scale to enable, you know, a meaningful amount of complexity, while giving your users a smooth path to transitioning to new models, new techniques, et cetera. So that's, yeah, really it's the pace of development is both the exciting thing, but also the main challenge.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, you know, even as a user of like a lot of AI tools, I'm thrilled by everything that's coming out. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I can do so many things so much better and faster. But then at the same time, it's like slightly terrifying because I'm like, oh man, like you just got to like always stay so on top of it. And yeah, there's a lot happening. And also yeah, it can be stressful being like, oh my gosh, we got to update this because this new thing came out and changes how you do things.
And I actually think we have it, we have it easier in some ways because I think the easy part is the, you know, no one, it's pretty clear that the need for compute cycles and platforms like ours is there to stay. But I think higher in the stacks, it's, you know, the sands can shift even faster because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're building a solution that fixes this problem with generative AI, then, oh, now a new model's come out and completely like obviates the need for that entirely. So I feel like we have it easier in some sense, but the kind of, maybe the pure complexity of the hardware details all the way up is maybe the flip side of the coin for us.
Oh yeah, 100%. There's so much is changing, and yeah, it 100% does that. In fact, I was just on X today, and I saw a post, which, I mean, I'll give a disclaimer. I haven't actually seen the demo of this software, so I can't, you know, they were just, I think, an investor or something that had an inside look. But apparently there was a software where he wrote down on a piece of paper an exact like description of what he wanted his new software tool to do. And the AI completely generated the whole thing. And I'm sitting here currently working on a software AI startup called AI Box. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like how much of what I'm building today and my developers are working on today, like is going to be just done by an AI model like soon. But whatever, you know, you can't let it slow you down because at the end of the day, you still got to get everything done. A question I have for you is, you know, how does Octo AI address the customization and tuning of AI models for specific use cases without requiring developers to be AI experts, right? Like a ton of like AI is being talked about and implemented into everything. It's the big trending thing right now. But a lot of developers, like they're not AI experts. They're experts in some other area. So how does Octo AI really kind of help this?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because like I said earlier, generative AI, like the excitement of it is how general purpose it is and how out of the box you can immediately get value and build new applications, products and companies. But that, you know, there's no silver bullet. And so there is both like an opportunity and a need to take these models and fine tune them for your particular use case and potentially even distill that down, that behavior down into a smaller model so that you get better cost and latency dynamics with the same quality of output. And so we do this today on in particular on the image side. Let me kind of describe how this works. So
yeah,
you know, there's models like Stable Diffusion, SDXL, SVD for video, and SD3 coming soon for generating images and video. But if you want to bring that, you know, maybe a specific asset like a t-shirt design or a person or an object into that generation loop, then fine tuning is the way to go there. And so we have a service that allows you to upload a few example images, generate what's called a LoRa adapter. That's basically a lightweight set of weights that layer on top of the existing weights for one of these models.
Okay.
And then per request from you or your indirectly through your users, invoke these LoRAs and potentially stack them on top of each other to get composability effects. And so then what's nice about that is that we do this on the back end and slot these in as needed, right on demand, so that you don't have to pay for provisioning capacity for hardware for your specific model. Because that's typically where many platforms break down is, you know, oh, great, I get to pay as I go per the token, per the image for, you know, the base models. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I want to customize, then now I have to go pay for dedicated capacity and dedicated machines. Whereas we allow you to just generate these lightweight adapters and then invoke them per a request. And that makes it really easy for you to try things out, test them, canary deploy them, compose them together, make mix and match for your users. And we're going to be launching this shortly on the LLM side as well. So we're really excited about that.
Super cool. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So useful, right? You guys are making so many tools that, yeah, I know a lot of people using, but a lot of people I think should be using that, that might not even know about them. So I'm super excited about that. Something I'd love to ask you about as well. You're obviously someone that's very deeply involved in, you know, machine learning, AI, and what's going on in the space. I'd love to know, what is a prediction that you can make about the future in AI, maybe specifically in application development, but something maybe people aren't talking about today or thinking about, but something that you're seeing coming down the pipe?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because when we had our first conference right after starting the company, and I got up on the stage and said, you know, I made this wild prediction at the time, but now I think it's actually somewhat sedate because it's somewhat obvious, but my prediction was that, and still is that, you know, there's many, many more software developers than there are AI developers now. And AI is seen as a niche, like advanced, hard, super skilled use case. But in reality, this is going to invert very fast because the nature of like how you control and manipulate AI models is essentially by examples. And so the input outputs are much more salient and normal for average you know, people to use and leverage and learn how to improve upon than the like strict formal languages of software engineering and the layers of complexity. So I think it's actually just a tooling problem that, you know, the platforms like ours and the tooling is still not quite up to this you know, to the job of enabling the average person to go out and do. But like, as I mentioned, with modern generative AI, I think this is less of a surprising claim because ChatGPT or whatnot like lets you kind of see and touch this yourself. And now open source models and platforms like ours make it cost effective for everyone to do that. So it's it's much less maybe shocking, but I think it's still all the more amazing because we're going to have, you know, millions and then billions of people like leveraging AI for central parts of their lives within a very short amount of time, much shorter than I think most people expect.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there. I think like the pace that we're accelerating is crazy. The amount of people that, you know, I'm talking to an uncle who is 0% tech savvy and he's using ChatGPT for everything. And I think it's just, yeah, it's something that is obviously growing and going to be integrated for a lot of people. Something I'd love to ask you about. So you just mentioned, you know, open source, and when you're kind of talking about some of the other co-founders of OctoAI and some of the open source things they'd worked on in the past, I'd be super curious. I noticed you guys have recently integrated, you have some integrations with Apache TMV into what you guys are doing. I'm wondering how important is open source in, you know, the OctoAI community, your strategy, your product development? Like, what role does open source play for you guys?
Yeah, great question. And just a quick clarification, it's actually TVM, Tensor Virtual Machine.
Oh, what did I say?
TMV, I think. Yeah. And yeah, from the beginning, we've, like, TVM has been an Apache open source project, and we continue to contribute a lot to that with the rest of the community. MLC is now, MLC LLM is a new project that we've created along with collaborators outside for the kind of LLM and generative AI pieces on top of TVM. And we leverage those heavily in our platform to get the flexibility and control and performance for our platform. and then benefiting from the open source community. And I'd say that, that's been an important part of the company from the beginning. I would say the kind of ways or the tactics have changed in terms of kind of, you know, when do we run conferences? When do we not? When do we have active meetups, and when do we have a smaller group of collaborators that, we're pushing new features around and for and with. So just to keep up with the pace of development, it's been kind of an ongoing evolution, but yeah, it's always been an important part. And we also leverage other portions. TVM takes kernels from projects like TensorRT LLM, VLLM, Cutlass, which are all open source projects, and actually puts those under one roof. So it's actually an ecosystem of open source projects as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, super excited. Obviously, open source is something that gets developers and a lot of people quite excited. Personally, I'm super excited with a lot of the open source stuff happening. So that's exciting.
And one more point just to mention there is one reason open source is so important at the layer of the stack we're in is just because, when we talk to larger enterprises that want to, maybe they already have their own GPU allocations and they in the cloud or on-prem, and they want the assurance of kind of being able to audit and see how much is open source. And, infrastructure code is usually a much easier sale when you're talking to people that can kind of look at portions of the code base and feel like there's a solid foundation that they can, have some control and flexibility over. And in fact, we're launching our new OctoStack product, which enables all the goodness that we've produced in our hosted platform and you to get the benefits of that for your own private environment. So we're really excited about that. And open source is another big component of that as well.
That's amazing. Okay, that's super exciting. I want to ask you more about that. But first, I wanted to ask you, so obviously in AI, there are a ton of misconceptions about AI. It's, it's a crazy time right now, right?
Right.
What I'm wondering is, what is one myth that you would like to debunk in relation to AI, something that people are getting wrong, maybe a common misconception that people do not have right?
Yeah, I mean, the first is that it's, and I've seen this actually for, quite some time in my career, and in some ways it's worse and better now, is just the myth that it's going to do everything for you right out of the box and kind of it can do anything. And I think that you might be saying, oh, well, that's obvious, right? Like nobody really believes that, but you'd be surprised at the ways that people kind of believe that are don't believe that logically, but they kind of assume that in their thinking and how they build things, right? It's just like, oh, I'm going to go on here and, pull in this API and then boom, it's going to work. And nothing works like that. Like if, and actually the analogy I like to use for modern generative AI is for those of you that have experience hiring people for a job and getting them onboarded and bringing them up to speed to work on a project, there's a process that you have to go through of even extremely talented, sophisticated folks with experience of giving them time to onboard and making sure that the asks are clear and the goal is clear and what the constraints are. And so AI is the same way, right? You have to kind of, come to the plate knowing that it has limitations and you're going to have to work around those in various ways. And I think that's the main misconception is just it's like magic dust that you sprinkle on things and it makes it better. And it takes work. It's just the where the work happens and kind of where your starting point is and your ending point are shifted up in terms of capability, but it's fundamentally, it's still technical, hard work. And there's, it's really exciting work, but I think people don't necessarily take that into account.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I also think that there's probably a good level of perhaps AI, some AI solutions being oversold by people, whether, they're being extreme on some YouTube or social media clip about how crazy some new software is. And so, I think it's definitely important to not, not believe it can literally do everything perfectly the first time. There's definitely a lot of work you got to put in for these solutions. I'd love to ask you, looking back on your journey, where you are today, what's one piece of advice you feel like you could give people maybe starting out in the field?
Yeah, I think there's so many things I could say. Maybe two that come to mind immediately is, number one, like, don't compare yourself to others. Yes, it can sometimes be helpful to learn from, you know, hearing about someone else and, you know, getting tips and tricks from them. But at least, you know, for maybe myself, but I think a lot of people out there, like, it's usually more harmful than good to, like, compare yourself to others and say, oh, you know, if I had started 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 1 year ago, like, or if I had this background or met that person. But, like, the time to start is now, right? Like, if you want to achieve something, do something, start now. Like, it's never too late. There's, you know, we're at the, you know, cathode ray tubes of AI, and it's only going to get better from here. And so, you know, if you started now and look back 5 years, you're going to be amazed, as opposed to if you just take the sidelines and watch from the sidelines for the next 5 years. So if you want to go do something, like, don't let that hold you back. It's actually more easy than ever to get started on any layer of the stack that you want. Yep. That's one. The second I'd say is, you know, don't be too hard on yourself, right? Like, it's kind of, once you get started, now, like, just be focused on the, like, user, customer, outcome, you know, use case that you're interested in, and, like, try to quiet out all the noise. Cause I think the social media effect of, like, oh, watching people on their vacations and their beautiful families or whatever, like, it's there in business as well, when all you see is just the amazing successes around you of other companies, and it can really, like, drain you quickly of like, oh, well, I don't have that, or I didn't achieve that award, or, you know, I didn't hit that ARR milestone. And, like, tune all that out. Like, focus on your, you know, customer and use case if you're building a product, or your, you know, technical goal or milestone if you're going that direction. And, like, just have fun with it and enjoy the process, right? I know it's all cliche advice, but it really is so true in this day and age of just where it's, you know, the comparisons are all around you, and it's so easy to kind of get pulled into that negative loop that is so dangerous.
I love that. That is so relevant. I feel like in today, when that's pretty much like the LinkedIn feed, you know, it used to be the Instagram feed of people's perfect life. Now it's the LinkedIn feed of people's perfect, like, career path, you know? You're like, oh my gosh, like...
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
So funny. Okay, Jason, it has been phenomenal having you on the podcast. Insight stories, this has been awesome. Last thing I want to ask you, I know you got to go, but what are some exciting developments that people can look forward to coming out of Octo AI in the near future?
Yeah, so I mentioned two already, the you know, bringing LLMs into the fold of fine-tuning LoRAs and running those at inference time. And OctoStack, our on-prem private offering that allows you to kind of scale this up in your own capacity and hardware as well. Beyond that, I think we've just continued to push better performance, better costs, more models, better models, working with partners along the way. And yeah, working with customers has just been great. And we continue to learn every day from them and as we improve their service and products.
Amazing. All right. Well, I will drop the link to your site in the show notes. So if anyone wants to check out Octo AI, they can go do that. Absolutely phenomenal company. So, you know, gets my full endorsement and support. Jason, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing. To the listener, thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Chat podcast. Make sure to rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And I hope that you all have an amazing rest of your day.